cheat a bye. Upon the black road he would ride, the stones were in his eyes, Black Elk was on the rise. He heals people and he never lost the visions in his mind.
Hey everyone, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 101. Thanks for picking us up this week. We're really excited to bring you an interview with Chris Pandolfi, who's the banjo player for the infamous String Dusters and a big Fish fan. We talk about the String Dusters' new album, their tour, as well as his Fish experience, and he shares some awesome stories about playing with Phil Lesh and Page and Fishman and Ryan Adams and others. It's a really fun conversation. If you haven't seen this band, go check them out. One of the best live music experiences out there. So enjoy the conversation, and we'll see you next week. Hey everyone, I'm here with Chris Pandolfi, who is a Fish fan, first and foremost, but also a banjo player for the infamous String Dusters. He's joining us from Portland, Maine on tour. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good to be here.
And you guys are in the middle of your tour. You just released an album, Laws of Gravity, last week, right? How's it going out there so far?
Going great, yeah. Laws of Gravity is finally out, and we're on the road doing our thing, and excited about the album and connecting with a lot of people starting up here in the Northeast, sort of for this first leg. So it's good. The energy is good. Everyone's excited, and we haven't been on tour for a long time. The sort of second half of 2016 was a lot of cool and different things, festivals and, more collaborations. And now we're sort of back to the core String Dusters experience. And it's great, man. We're really into it. We're having a good time.
We were just chatting before we started recording about the album. I feel like it is a return to sort of vintage String Dusters. But, you guys have spent a lot of the last, 2 years or so with Nikki Bloom and doing Ladies and Gentlemen and a lot of the collaborations you've described. How has that influenced the way you guys are sort of playing and what you recorded on Laws of Gravity?
Well, yeah, the last few years have seen a lot of collaborations. Ladies and Gentlemen obviously was all collaborations and connected us with some great artists, including Nikki Bloom, who you mentioned, and she was on tour with us. And then, of course, we connected with Ryan Adams for a short run of some really, really memorable shows. And
that was unbelievable, man.
Some stuff with Phil Lesh. Yeah, the Ryan stuff and Phil in the same way. Those were, as the Ladies and Gentlemen experiences were as well, just all really inspiring, really, really inspiring, experiences as far as just seeing how other artists do their thing and kind of getting a taste of something different and then just playing with some of the best, man. I mean, Ryan, I couldn't believe just how talented the guy was. And, every time he starts to play and starts to sing and the song, I mean, it's really inspiring. I think we all came out of that experience with Ryan just feeling like, man, we just need to do better, as songwriters.
Wow.
And that's what inspiration and influences are all about. You sort of seek out the things that you love and you try to glean from that what you think is really good about it. In Ryan's case, that was the songwriting. And then of course, Phil, the connection with Phil is to me more about the performance and the moment with the audience and, especially at Lock-In, which doing the Phil and Friends thing at Lock-In was such a surreal experience, not only because, of the lineup on stage, I had Phil and Derek Trucks to my left and Fishman behind me and Paige over to my right. I was just like, I can't even believe it.
But that's insane.
Seeing those guys do their thing, in front of that Lock-In crowd, 40,000 strong, amazing fans who all really know what they're seeing, and just to see Phil how in the moment he is with the music, You know, so those are two very different disciplines, of course, Ryan with the songwriting and Phil with the performance. But after a really awesome and fulfilling year of collaborations, I feel like we, the band, just really last year as we were working on Laws of Gravity, it was just like, let's just take all the best stuff from this and up our game and you know, write songs that will come alive in a performance setting and also that stand on their own as songs. And then, of course, the whole studio side of it, you know, how do we get in the studio? How do we bring that energy that we cultivated, you know, for so many years on the stage? How do we get that flowing in the studio? And that, those were sort of the raw goals behind the thing. And I was really proud of the way everyone stepped up in the preparation process and also in the studio. And, you know, I think that the finished product, Laws of Gravity, I think it's our best album, absolutely. I think it really feels the most like us. It feels the most real, certainly the most live in the studio. And so, you know, it's good. You put something like that out, and we're just feeling like, man, this one is resonating with people, you know, more than ever before. And you know, we're just hoping that it really gets out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people listening who haven't heard the String Dusters, obviously check out the album. And you're going to wrap up your tour currently in the next couple of weeks, but you guys are going to be everywhere over the next several months, right?
Yeah, the tour really winds on all the way, you know, through April and into May, at which point we sort of segue into festival season. But yeah, we're covering the whole country over the next 5 months.
That's pretty exciting. And I know you guys come to the East Coast, and you obviously play a lot out in Denver and other places, but does this feel like more of a covering the whole U.S. or is this sort of a typical kind of route that you guys would follow throughout the year?
They're all a little different, but this feels like the most comprehensive tour that we've done in a very long time.
Nice.
You know, our business is primarily built around the live show, you know, that's our thing in this sort of this day and age. The whole album sale thing is in a very weird place, so we still make albums, and you know, it's still a very, I think, meaningful piece of art, you know, a collection of songs, the latest and greatest, you know, the distillation of all the new influences in music and life, etc., come together to form this, you know, essentially set of music. And the album still makes a ton of sense, not necessarily reflected in the, you know, business side of things, but it is still sort of the moment when you have the most attention shining on you. And so, you know, it's a big part of what you do as a band, but ultimately touring is what pays the bills for a band like ours. So, you know, we love to play live, you know, our shows are 3 hours, two sets, and very different every night, and a lot of creativity, and a lot of, you know, really sort of being in the moment. And I mean, it's the payoff for us. So yeah, we're psyched to be on the road for sure.
We want to talk just a little bit about your sort of Phish experience. Obviously they've been an inspiration for you. And I think when we talked previously, or maybe in an offline conversation, you had mentioned that you, I think, introduced a lot of the rest of the band to Phish. And, you know, just the fact that you've been so instrumental in pushing this kind of evolution of bluegrass, I think. So I'd like to hear a little bit about how Phish has sort of influenced you musically, but I guess let's just start with where your Phish experience began.
Yeah, you know, Phish, when I was in high school, you know, I remember one Christmas, my brother gave me a copy of Lawn Boy, and that was my first introduction to the band. And it was around that time that I was really getting excited about music, and I hadn't started playing yet. But, you know, they were that first band for me, that gateway to seeing just the concert experience, you know, in full living color. And it really resonated with me. I just remember thinking, you know, I just got it, you know, and it meant a lot to me. And I was always so excited to go be a part of it, you know, part of the audience working with the band in this one sort of big organism. And though I didn't necessarily know what I was seeing back then, you know, it had a big effect on me. And, you know, fast forward a few years and I was discovering other bands, and the Flecktones ultimately were the thing that inspired me to get into the banjo. And then, you know, around that time, you know, through college and then into the 2000s was not necessarily the most, you know, illustrious era for Phish. And I sort of, you know, I wasn't really that tuned in. I had found a lot of other types of music, including bluegrass and other fusion stuff, sort of derivative of the Flecktones. But the influence that they had on me was always, you know, lingering. I think I probably went to, you know, a handful, 20, 25 shows in the 90s, you know, some really, really memorable shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as we started to evolve as a band, you know, one of the most fun things about being in a band with a group of guys who you are really synchronous with is just a lot of, you know, late night discussions about how can we make our music better? You know, what makes it great? You know, looking at those moments when the crowd is just like, whoa, so synchronous, so tuned in, like, what is that? And as that conversation evolved, you know, Phish and, of course, the Grateful Dead crept in, and yep, we started to take our songs and you know, add these jam sections to them. And it really took some time. And, you know, the sort of beauty of that discipline is that it's really hit or miss. And so we'd go back and review, you know, and what made this moment really happen. And as that conversation was rolling, you know, and the band was evolving over the years, you know, I sort of started to tune back in, and simultaneously, I think Phish was sort of coming back together and hitting their stride again. And then I think, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I think you were there. I think those were the first shows that I had been back to after, you know, not seeing them for 10 years.
Yeah.
And you know, that was at Dick's. And now I've seen a bunch of shows since then, and even taken the band to the Bill Graham shows in San Francisco last year. And it's just cool to kind of come full circle and, you know, to have that influence. You know, there's only so many bands that you can connect with in your younger years, in an earlier era, that like, that influence you in a way that, you know, it's like your tribe, like your old friends. You know, you can only have,
yeah,
so many of those, you know, and then you have these certain bands that they're the ones that you connected to early on that got you really excited about music. And that's, you know, that's Phish for me. So we've taken a lot of parts of their music and, you know, the way that they structure their show, and sort of tried to make those concepts our own in a meaningful way. And, you know, and we also play some of their tunes, you know, we've got First Tube and Bathtub Gin. We've got, you know, we play a version of Free. And so it's cool to come full circle and have these powerful influences, you know, be a part of what we're doing now in a meaningful way.
Man, yeah, man, absolutely. And I remember Dick's 2014 standing there with you. I think that was the first show you had seen in quite a while, right? And
yeah.
And I think we texted the next morning, and you were like, I got to get tickets for tonight.
That's right. That's exactly what happened. And I went on, you know, I went on Flash Seats or whatever, and I was back that next night. And it was cool. You know, they really sound great these days. You know, I just was at two of the MSG shows over New Year's, the first two. And, you know, everyone's, needless to say, everyone's got an opinion, but
yeah,
for me, it's not as much about looking just at this thing that's right in front of you and judging. It's so much more. It's so much more. All these connections, you know, the history with the music, my band, the influence, and all of that together, you know, it's just, I can't have a bad time when I'm seeing those guys these days. And I think they sound great, you know. They may not take everyone all the way every time, but they're playing in a way that I think every show is really, really a good experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys have kind of been pushing the limits of bluegrass, I think. How do you feel about sort of carrying that mantle?
You know, that's a good question and one that we get a lot. And I think, you know, as much as there's a conscious decision there, you know, that we want to push the envelope and we want to be original, I think a lot of those artistic things are, you know, there are things that need to happen naturally. There are things that need to evolve in the right way. And, you know, that's the beauty of being in a band like this is we have so, you know, we're playing, you know, 5 shows this week and 5 shows next week. So we get to play a show and, you know, and sort of download everyone's experience that night and talk it over and then take that and apply it right then and there the next night, you know?
Yeah.
So in terms of the evolution of the music, we're so lucky because we're allowed to, you know, we get to sort of let that happen in real time. So there's a certain conscious element to it, but we're just trying to take all the things that we love, you know, and I'm 1/5 of this thing. So these influences that I bring to the band, you know, are tempered with a big set of other influences. And
yeah,
the challenge is to make them work together, you know, in a meaningful way, and how to make songcraft sort of intersect with, you know, kind of the jamming element, the in the moment element. And you know, like I said, some nights it goes better than others, but as far as the evolution of bluegrass, you know, it's going that way. I wrote an article for No Depression's big Bluegrass and Beyond issue this past winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk a lot, it's called The Two Worlds of Bluegrass, and I talk a lot about how, you know, the traditional world sort of soldiers on and is still trying to, you know, maintain their relevance, you know, in a world where there are just more and more bands every day all the time. But then, you know, we're part of a scene that embraces evolution and is also seeing a lot more growth, a lot more fans, and sustaining bands, you know, in a meaningful way. I think bands that will be around for a long time. And so it's, you know, the evolution is a natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really proud of the way that we kind of make all these things go together musically. And I'm just excited to see where it goes. But it's, you know, as we're on tour right now, that evolution is kind of in full swing, you know, day after day after day. And that's a really cool thing.
Obviously, you guys are one of my favorite bands. And I think every live String Duster show has those moments that you experience at Fish shows or people who got to see the Dead, where you like kind of lose track of time, you lose track of the song, you lose track of the, you know, and you get lost in it. And that's sort of the point for a lot of us fans. So you guys are doing a great job, and I encourage people to come see you guys, check out the tour dates. Let's talk just a little bit, Chris. I'll let you go in a couple minutes. What are some like key moments in your seeing Fish or in your memory of seeing Fish that just like knocked you on the floor? Are there any from your early days or more recently that just stick out in your memory?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've also actually, it's great now as a fan because, you know, you don't have to go to every show and you can still experience so many of the great live moments just by jumping on Spotify and taking a listen, you know? And so I think, you know, that wasn't, you know, back in the day you had to, you know, get a cassette mailed to you and it was a very sort of not real time experience. So,
yeah.
You know, in addition to seeing shows, you know, I've also, been listening again lately and discovering a lot of cool, just listening for that moment when, you know, when they're out there on a limb and it works. That's what I love. And hearing,
mm-hmm.
you know, they have this automatic draw. I can remember, I remember when I went to Bill Graham, when the Dusters were doing pre-production in the Bay Area last fall, and, you know, they played Character Zero, I think it was the encore on the third night, or maybe the second night, and Trey turned the mic around to the crowd, and that energy, that knowledge of the music, that connection between the band and the audience, you know, that's the moment. I can remember, pretty sure it was at Clifford Ball, you know, when they had, there was a moment, I'm pretty sure they were playing Harry Hood, and there was a moment where the synchronicity between the production, the lights, the crowd, the band, again, that just that moment, you know, when everything comes together. And typically it comes in the moment when, you know, when they're out there on a limb and they're taking that chance, and, you know, it all sort of ties back together in a perfect way. And you know, that's the moment that we reference, you know, like, for example, the Dusters, every night before we play, we have a meeting an hour before we play. We run over the set list. We talk about transitions and, you know, and this, on this recent LEGO tour, we had a meeting recently where we're saying, let's really just try to up our game in terms of presence with the transitions. And let's not just, you know, rush to the next song and almost say, you know, when one guy starts to get that vibe, oh, it's like, let's get this over with, kind of. Let's get on to something more meaningful. If that concept creeps in, you're defeating the purpose. You're stripping yourself of that presence that you need. And, you know, I think having seen that, having been there, having heard that, you know, that's when you know it's out there, that's what you want to try and go and replicate. The magic of it is it's not there, you know, every time. But I can remember, that's the thing I remember about back in the day. When I would get excited to go to a show, it was always just about, and the thing that always got me most excited, and I remember Dix, I think last year, you know, on, I can't remember, they played Sand on the last night, I think last, or 2 years ago with Dix, and I remember I had this, like, amazing deja vu where they were setting out into the jam, and you could just, it's just like that moment, it's just like, all right, here we go. The journey starts now. And that, I always loved that moment. I always looked for that. And you know, in trying to replicate that with our own band, you can really feel it's such a function of, all a function of presence. You know, the minute you have one guy who's not comfortable with that vulnerability, that in the momentness and wants to just move on to the next thing, that's, you know, that's sort of the antithesis of that. Of that thing, you really gotta be there. So those are some of the biggest moments that I remember, are those times when it's like, all right, here we go. The action is starting now. You know, it's like you have a great set and a great pacing and all these different songs that you want to hear, and they just set the atmosphere with the crowd. But then that's the payoff moment for me, is when they start to go deep. And you can just tell, it's like, all right, the journey is starting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally, yeah. So just one more question, Chris. Over the past year, you've been on stage with Mike and Paige and Fishman. I mean, what's the approach to playing music? And this doesn't have to apply just to Fish, but to any of your idols who I know you've shared the stage with, a lot of people you admire. What's your approach? I mean, is it to kind of give them the space and just try to fill in around them? Does it depend on who it is and what the night is? I'm just curious how you handle yourself being a huge fan of someone that you're then sharing a stage with.
Yeah, it really depends a lot on the setting. You know, I mean, that Phil and Friends gig, I can, you know, I mean, that'll be a tough one to top in terms of being on stage with, you know, your heroes. Mm-hmm. And in that setting, I remember thinking, you know, I'm just really going to lay back and take cues from these guys and try and just listen, you know, really just listen. And mm-hmm. with that many musicians on stage, you know, you could argue that it gets even a little busy sometimes. And so there's nothing wrong with just sitting back and letting the music sort of take shape around you. But I do remember a couple things really clearly about that show. I remember hearing Paige. I remember Phil throwing the solo over to Paige, and you know, a lot like he does in Fish, I seem to remember, you know, it was like he was playing out, yes, but he was also looking for sort of a collaborator, you know, and people mm-hmm. to play with him. And when you would play off what he played, he was right there with you, and he would look up and he would look at you, and he wanted that. And it's like, you know, it's like 1 + 1 = 3, you know, when you have one guy who's, again, just in the moment and making music, and he teams up with someone else who's listening to him, and then you've got two guys building off each other. There's a synchronicity there that really translates to the crowd, you know. And then so there was a lot of that at that show, you know, and people sort of working with each other, and it was such an awesome collaboration. But then, you know, you always got to be ready too, because your moment is going to come. And mm-hmm. for me, you know, it was on Shakedown Street, and Phil sort of gave me the nod, and, you know, you got to be ready for that. You got to be ready to step up and lead the charge, even if, you know, you've got this all-star cast behind you. Best way to do that is just to be right there, not think about what's coming, not think about what's been played, just hang in the moment. And if you do that, you know, I feel like it doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to have perfect execution. You don't have to play the perfect thing, but the crowd, you know, they don't always know exactly what they're hearing, but they do know when they're hearing someone who's right there with them at that moment in time. And so, you know, Phil was almost missed that set. You know, he showed up 5 minutes before we went on stage. So talk about in the momentness. I mean, that's what that demanded, you know, maybe more than any gig I've ever played. Here you are with this unbelievable all-star cast in front of 40,000 people. And if you're not flowing with them, you know, we have no rehearsal, we've never played together, but you have all these great players. You know, we rehearsed that day, but without Phil, it was just really a mock-up of every song. So,
right.
You know, I see those guys play, and I see that every time. And, you know, Fish is as good an example of that as anything. When you see them and they're on, they're tuned into each other. They're very gracious with the music. They're patient. They're not thinking about what's next. They're just riding that wave right there and, you know, doing it sort of in sync with the audience. So, I mean, I saw that happening, you know, that stage, again, at Lock-In was like, it was like a classroom, you know, and everybody was so, I couldn't believe it. You look around the stage and everybody was just like heads on a swivel, just looking up, looking at Phil, looking at each other, you know, and that forced everyone into that vibe. And that was like, that's one of the great, awesome successes of Phil and Friends or any collaboration for that matter. It's just bringing good players together who are even better listeners and just letting them, you know, have that moment together and sort of syncing up with each other and creating this really unique thing. So that was sort of the takeaway, and, you know, probably something that we'll be thinking about and working on for the rest of our careers.
Wow, that's incredible. That's an awesome story. Thank you for sharing that. And
yeah, man, thank you, dude. Thank you for, you know, doing what you do and, you know, being part of the journey as well.
We'll leave the audience with a little music. Maybe I'll play some of that Dick's 14 show that kind of brought you back into the fold on the
awesome
way out. Cool. Chris, well, thanks for taking the time. I know you guys are busy on tour. Good luck the rest of the way. Look forward to seeing you next weekend, and thanks for joining the podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks, RJ. Talk to you soon, man.
Okay.
about